Good morning. I want to welcome everyone here today, and I'm glad to be here. I want to greet each one in Christ's name. The reason that we are here is because Jesus, it's because of him. And I really appreciated Jeff's devotions this morning, and I also, just enjoyed the discussion that we had in Sunday school. I wouldn't have mind just sitting there for another little while and keep discussing. I thought it was very, very interesting and very meaningful to my life. This morning, for a message to share with you, the title of my message is "Trust God, Not Yourself," and that's just a pretty plain title. But the message is revolving around four different verses in Proverbs, and these verses are two of them are in some ways direct contrast to the other two, or could say that two of them are opposite from the other two, but they support each other in that they are that way. The two verses come in a little bit negative, and then two verses come back with a solution. And I like a solution. You know, in our world, we have many things that are wrong, but it's nice to have solutions and a direction to overcome the things that are going wrong or whatever. So the verses that I really want to, I'm not going to focus on these verses very much, so I want to say them now. And they're very familiar verses in Proverbs 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. And then verse 6, in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And those two verses have always been very meaningful to me in my life. I have gotten myself in trouble and always come back to these verses that, you know, I need to trust the Lord in everything. Never depend on my own. And then the negative verses are the verses that are sort of, we don't like to hear this. In Proverbs 21:2, it says, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the hearts. And then also in Proverbs 16:2, it says, all the ways of man are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weigheth the spirits. And those two, last two verses are, in a lot of ways, direct contrast to the first two verses. But the first two verses that I read, how trusting the Lord, those verses, actually, if we can realize that what the writer is saying about that we shouldn't trust ourselves, then the last two verses actually really support. They come along with a solution, and I like that. So the goal of my message this morning, I want to help us, motivate us to make choices that are clearly righteous. I believe most choices, maybe not all choices, but most choices are either righteous or unrighteous. And so I want to, by God's grace, motivate us to make choices that are clearly right, righteous. Eleanor Roosevelt said this, one's philosophy is not best expressed in words. It is expressed in the choices one makes. In the long run, we shape our lives and we shape ourselves. The process never ends until we die, and the choices we make are ultimately our responsibility. So she's bringing out the point when she wrote this that what we do in what the choices we make in our lives, how we perform our life, that has more to say about us than some of the words we say. And I'm not wanting to come in conflict with what Jeff just shared, because I agree with Jeff. So what justifies our choices? That's a question. When you make a choice, what is normally your reason for the choice you made? Why do you make those choices? Do you base those choices off of biblical reasoning? Or how do you choose your friends? Or How do you decide which activities you will do? How do you decide where you will go or what places you will go to? And when you make choices, who are you pleasing? So this first part of my message is maybe going to seem a little depressing, but I want to make the problem that we deal with very clear. But at the end of the message, I hope to make it more hopeful and inspiring so that we can have clarity that we, through Jesus, we have power and direction to deal with this issue that we're speaking of. But I have been seeing in my own life how strong my flesh or my sin nature is. And, I've been studying this the last week, and it's a very simple message to study, but all of a sudden I see in my own life that I'm a desperate sinner without Jesus, and I'm prone to do stupid things. And I don't really think I'm alone in this problem. And it may seem to you that I'm overemphasizing this thought, but as I thought of this problem of thinking my ways are right, I start to notice so many things in my own life that are not for sure correct. For example, if a bad song comes on the radio, it's very easy for me to start thinking that it's okay to enjoy that song. And my mind will start justifying the reason why. My mind can also come up with these thoughts. And why would I justify enjoying a bad song on the radio? Why would I do that? But it's the flesh. The flesh is speaking through my mind. It's clearly wrong to listen to something that doesn't please Jesus. There are so many incidents in our life that are like this. I'm using just one for an example right now. But sometimes it's things that are clearly wrong, and then there are also things that are good, but our motive for doing is wrong. And it all comes from the flesh, the sin nature, working in our souls to have its own way. And then we as people, as humans, we are naturally bent on pleasing ourselves. The flesh comes up, we want to please ourselves. And either out of ignorance or out of selfishness, mostly out of selfishness, we find reasons in our subconscious mind to justify ourselves in this. When the flesh rises up and we want to please ourselves, we want to do what we like to do, and then our mind will justify that we're okay doing it. And the root problem is that the flesh wants to have its way in our souls. There are a lot of questions that we could ask ourselves that help us to see the problem that we each face. Helps us to look at it more closely. For example, when you were getting ready for church this morning, why did you dress the way you did? Did you dress this way because you wanted to please Jesus, or were you trying to please someone else? Or did you dress a certain way so you could be cool, so you could be sophisticated, or maybe you just wanted to be casual this morning? And you could be saying to me, you know, right now that, you know, don't make this so complicated. And I can understand that because I sort of am. But I want to show us this morning that our choices and our decisions that we make, they are not made aimlessly. There is within us a little part in our brain that I think constantly is saying to us that this is okay or this is not okay. And it goes back to what everything in our own mind is right. And our flesh is constantly telling that part of our brain that it's okay. And we cannot trust it. It's not always accurate, because our flesh can easily overpower that part of our brain. Our flesh wants to come up and take over that part of our brain, so that we justify things that we should not justify. And I see it so much in my own life. Our flesh will give us reasons to justify our own thinking. So this morning, when you think about, that's just one question, and there are many more things that you could apply to your life. Who were you trying to please this morning when you got dressed to come to church? In your dress, there's many self-deceptions that the mind can come up with, and there is a pastor named Bob Smith that wrote some self-deceptions that our mind will tell us. I wrote them down here. It says that other people that are not Christians have prejudice, but we have convictions. Others are conceited, but in me it's self-respect. When you spend time on your personal appearance, it's vanity. You shouldn't do that. That's vanity. But in me, it's just making the most of my God-given assets. In you, it's touchiness, but in me, it's sensitivity. In you, it's worry. In me, it's concern. So that's a matter of perception. But I think that we deal with these things. Our mind tricks us into thinking that it's okay to be this way. It's okay to think like this. And that was come from our daily bread. So I'm not saying that everything we do has to be judged wrong because it isn't directly connected to the kingdom of God. When we witness to the world, do we do it because we actually care for lost souls? Or do we do it to make us feel better in our Christian walk because we did something for Jesus? I'm not criticizing either way. I'm just wanting us to recognize that that one is better than the other, and we should ultimately do it because we have a burden for lost souls. But if you want to do it to make you feel better, I don't say you shouldn't do it. I say you should do it anyhow. But I wouldn't put too much faith in it. I have a small list of things that I'm just going to say, and I'm not wanting to point fingers. I'm only wanting to bring out a point. So like when we go to the gym to work out, who are we pleasing? Are we pleasing ourselves or are we pleasing Jesus? You know, I believe the gym can be a very good thing for a Christian to stay healthy. I'm in favor of that. But is it okay to go to the gym so that you can have the best looking body? I'm not going to say that's wrong, but want us to think about what we do and where we go, and that we need to understand what does Jesus think about these things, these choices we make, why we're doing them. How do we prioritize our life with Jesus in our hobbies, for example? How do you decide that you're going to go to the mission to sing, or instead you're going to go up in the mountains for the evening? And another thing is fun. Is the most important thing for you to do having fun? Do you put having fun, do I put having fun ahead of pleasing Jesus? I think in our society, in our world, people believe that if we're not doing something fun, then something is wrong. We've got to be doing something fun. That is strong in the world we live in. And the first thing that many people think is that we deserve fun. I can understand this kind of thinking in the world, but it doesn't make any sense for someone who is a Christian to think like this. If we love Jesus, then the first thing that we should think about when we make choice to do something is this activity going to please Jesus, or is it simply a way to please ourselves? And there are many activities that are okay to do, but if we are not available to do some of the kingdom work because we care more about having fun, how do we justify that thinking? And our mind will tell us a way to justify that thinking. Our brain will work overtime to help us to do that. And as I look at my own life, again, there are many times that I see that Jesus is not where he should be. He's not quite first. And I don't really have a hard time understanding why I struggle with this, because I know that it's my flesh. It's my natural thing that wants to come up and have its way in my life. But when I look at my life seriously, I have to admit that it can discourage me, because I think about how much that it, how easy it is to justify my own selfishness. And that is the problem that we are speaking of this morning mostly. I think that we as Christians are really failing with this problem where we justify our wrong choices. We let our minds be warped into it's not quite the right thinking. And maybe another example would be around being dressed modestly. Now, why would you want to dress immodestly? And again, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not wanting to point fingers at anyone. I want to make the point that every man's way is right in his own eyes. And sometimes we think our own way is right because of a prejudice that we have. Or many times we go on doing things that are not correct because of reaction to something that happened to us. Our minds will justify many wrongs by other wrongs that have happened in our life. And you've all heard it said that two wrongs don't make a right, and that's true. But our minds will constantly tell us that two wrongs do make a right. But just to prove this point again, this whole thing just proves that our ways are not always right. How we think is not always right. Many times it's wrong. There is a study. This is quite an old study now. It was done by CenterForReason.com, and they find that Christians have just as many abortions as non-Christian people do. And this was done in year of 2000, and says Christians are responsible for, in the year of 2000, 570,000 abortions. And then it says Catholics were found to be the worst offenders, with the abortion rates higher. And I'm not wanting to make a point of that. I'm just reading that. But what does this mean? And I believe it's saying that depending on our circumstances, sin and wrong can be justified when our mind is bent on pleasing the flesh. You know, how we think in our eyes suddenly looks different, much different, once we are dealing with the problem ourselves. Once we've made a mistake and we have to deal with it, now this looks different. We can preach and teach that killing babies is wrong, but once we're dealing with the problem ourselves, all of a sudden these kinds of things look different. That's what happens to Christians. And I have a story that I'm going to read that's sort of sobering, that brings out this point very much. And this is a story about a real story that really happened. And it's written in The Little House on the Freeway by Tim Kimball. So it's just a portion of a book he wrote. He says, when you're raised in the country, hunting is just a natural part of growing up. For years, I enjoyed packing up my guns and some food to head off into the woods. Even more than the hunting itself, I enjoyed the way these trips always seemed to deepen my relationship with friends as we hunted during the day and talked late into night around the campfire. When an old friend recently invited me to relive some of those days, I couldn't pass up the chance. For several weeks before the trip, I had taken the time to upgrade some of my equipment and sight in my rifle. When the day came, I was ready for the hunt. What I wasn't ready for was what my close friend Tom shared with me the first night on the trail. I always enjoyed the time I spent with Tom. He became a leader in his church, in his warm and friendly manner, had also taken him many steps along the path of business success. He had a lovely wife, and while I knew they had driven over some rocky roads in their marriage, things now seemed to be stable and growing. Tom's kids, two daughters and a son, were struggling in junior high and high school with the normal problems of peer pressure and acceptance. As we rode back into the mountains, I could tell that something big was eating away at Tom's heart. His normal efferent style was shrouded by an overwhelming inner hurt. Normally, Tom would attack problems with the same determination that had made him success in business. Now, I saw him wrestling with something that seemed to have knocked him to the mat for the count. Silence has a way of speaking for itself. All day and on into the evening, Tom let his lack of words shout out inner restlessness. Finally, around the first night's campfire, he opened up. The scenario Tom painted was annoyingly familiar. I heard it many times before in many other people's lives. But the details seemed such a contrast to the life that Tom and his wife lived and their belief they embraced. His oldest daughter had become attached to a boy at school. Shortly after they started going together, they became involved sexually. Within 2 months, she was pregnant. Tom's wife discovered the truth when a packet from Planned Parenthood came in the mail addressed to her daughter. When confronted with it, the girl admitted she had requested it, and when she went to the clinic to find out if she was pregnant. If we totaled up the number of girls who had gotten pregnant out of wedlock during the past 200 years of our nation's history, the total would be millions. Countless parents through the years have faced the devastating news. Being a member of such a large fraternity of history, however, does not soften the severity of the blow to your heart when you discover it's your daughter. Tom shared the humiliation he experienced when he realized that all of his teaching and his example had been ignored. Years of spiritual training had been put aside. His stomach churned as he relived the emotional agony of knowing that the little girl and his wife, that he and his wife loved so much, had made a choice that had permanently scarred her heart. I'm frequently confronted with problems in my ministry and found out that dwelling on this only makes matters worse. I worshiped a God of forgiveness and solutions, and at that moment in our conversation, I was anxious to turn toward hope and healing. I asked Tom what they had decided to do. Would they keep the baby or put it up for adoption? That's when he delivered the blow. With the fire burning low, Tom paused for long before answering. And when he spoke, he wouldn't look me in the eye. We considered the alternatives, Tim. Weighed all the options. He took a deep breath. We finally made an appointment with the abortion clinic. I took her down there myself. I dropped the stick I had been poking the coals with and stared at Tom. Except for the wind in the trees and the snapping of our fire, it was quiet for a long time. I couldn't believe this. Was this the man who for years had been so outspoken against abortion? He and his wife had been volunteered at a crisis pregnancy center in his city. Heartsick, I pressed upon the decision. Tom then made a statement that captured the essence of his problem, and the problem many others have been entering into genuine rest. In a mechanical voice, he said, I know what I believed, Tim, but that's different than what I had to do. I had to make a decision that had the least amount of consequences for people involved. Just by the way he said it, I could tell my friend had rehearsed these lines over and over in his mind. And by the look in his eyes and the emptiness in his voice, I could tell his words sounded hollow to him as they did to me. That's a very sad story, in my opinion. It's almost so sad I can't stand reading it. But, you know, someone said that once we assuage our conscience by calling something a necessary evil, it begins to look more and more necessary and less evil. And I think that happens to many Christians when we start depending on our own thinking and our own choices, and we leave God out. We don't trust God. We get off track, and we get off track permanently. There's a book titled Mistakes Were Made, But Not By Me, that speaks how people don't want to admit they made mistakes. And instead of fixing their mistakes, they continue on making even worse mistakes. And it's true. Our world is full of people like this. And then when Christian people do this, it's even a worse effect on our world. And I believe that's why the church has done this too much and has depended on their own thinking and own ways, especially when they get involved with a mistake they made or a mistake that happened. They don't take care of it properly. So I think that one thing that true Christians have is Jesus to forgive us of our mistakes. And we also believe that our problem is the flesh wanting to have our eternal souls. True Christians cannot depend on their own thinking. There are many more ways that in which we can think our own way is right. And I hope this morning that we can look more seriously at our ways and think of them more seriously. Ask Jesus what he thinks about our choices. If we want to be a Christian, we should not be depending on our own thinking. I don't know if I should say at all or too much. I'm not sure. I mean, I know there are times when our thinking is correct. But it's very, very, I know in my own life I can get into my own thinking so easily and get off track. I just think that it's best for us to never depend on our thinking, our own thinking. We need to lay aside our own thinking and trust Jesus and really evaluate what he thinks. And there is a problem that has been with man. This problem has been with man since the beginning of time. And I want to read in Romans 7 just to get this in our mind. We see this frustration that Paul wrote in Romans 7. You can follow along if you like. Romans 7, verse 14, I'm going to start reading. It says, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I allow not. For what I would, that I do not. But what I hate, that I do. If then I do that which I would not, I consent unto the law that it is good. Now then, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I find not. For the good that I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do. Now if I do that I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. I find then a law that, when I would do good, evil is present with me. For I delight in the law of God after the inward man. But I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death?" And then here it says, "I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then with my mind, I myself serve the law of God, but with the flesh, the law of sin." And it just brings out the point, Paul was frustrated with it too, how that in our own thinking, the flesh wants to control that, and wants to come up and just change our mind and cause us to justify wrong in our own lives. So far I've shared a pretty discouraging message so far today, I think. And I want to straighten it out a little bit now, reminding us of the biblical solution for this problem that we have. And I want to say again that the reason I give this message is because I want to remind us today that how desperate we really are without Christ. You know, regardless how good we think we are, we can't do anything that is that much good in the kingdom of God until we have Jesus in our heart, until we invite him into our life, and we let him abide in our life, in our hearts. Without Jesus, we are totally lost and void of any hope of eternity. And I also want to reckon with choices that we make in every aspect of our lives. You know, put your choices on a ledger sheet and see how they add up. Reconcile them with clear teachings of the Bible. Compare them to how, you know, compare the teachings of the Bible and our choices and see how they balance out at the end. The verses in Proverbs says that God ponders our hearts. I believe this means that God understands why we make the choices we make, why we're doing what we're doing. He understands our motives for everything that we do. So regardless how we justify what we do or don't do, in the end, God is still the one that's going to reconcile what we're doing. So why go through our life making choices that are driven from sin nature? Why do things that are not consistent with biblical teachings? You know, there are some things out there that are a little bit more gray. They're not as black and white as other things are. But knowing that God will judge my heart and will balance out what I justify on my biblical balance sheet, the thing that I allow in my life that Jesus didn't have his signature on or he didn't give approval on or doesn't line up with what Scripture would really be, I don't really want that to be there. I want to get rid of those gray areas and don't be any part of them. I don't want to have any of that questionable thing in my life, in my heart. I want to ask Jesus to help me get rid of those areas and fully submit my ways to his power. And then I want to just leave the verses here that we read first. "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." And there is much hope for us. We have
everything that we need to have understanding and to make right choices and to do the things that we need to do. Even as discouraging as I have made it, we don't have to go that route. We can trust Jesus with everything, all our decisions, and give him all that. And I just want to encourage us to be more careful with how we make decisions, how we make choices about the things that we do or allow in our lives. Because I think sometimes many of those things don't seem like they could affect us that much either way. They might be neutral, we might tell ourselves. Our mind might say they're neutral. But in the end, all things lead to a different, to some place. And there are not very many things in life that are truly neutral. Eventually, they will lead to the righteous or unrighteous. So that's why we want to trust God with all of our thinking. I'm going to close with that. Thank you for your attention. But I'll leave it open for a short time for